Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Deadline City. We are your hosts, Zoraida Cordova
and Danielle Clayton.
And today's destination is the dreaded writer's block.
I don't want to go to writer's block. I don't want to go to that town.
It's a street. It's an alley.
Excuse me.
It's a dark alley of a street where no one likes to walk through.
And it's probably dark and dangerous and full of monsters. And I'm a scaredy cat.
So. Yes, it has the doubt monsters, the deadline little critters.
And I hate it. So, I hate it. But we have to talk about it. So
yeah, let's do it. I feel like every author has this problem, right?
Yes.
Can't work. I can't write. The ideas are not coming to me. And if you do a little research, you find that some authors believe in writer's block and others don't.
It's the one question I get the most of when we are on panels. Mm-hmm. Every time we do an event together, someone asks, what about writer's block? What do I do?
How do you
fix it?
Right. And I think it's become this mythical thing, right? The myth of the author. There are so many myths about being an author. Like, do you write every single day? Do you dream up your ideas the way that Stephanie Meyer dreamt Edward Cullen?
Right.
You know, like,
He just fully formed in my head. He just came.
That is how most of my writers come to my author. That is how most of my characters come to me. They appear fully fledged, though. Like, no shade.
Ugh.
So I thought it would be interesting to see what other writers have to say. So I pulled up a couple of paragraphs. I'm not going to read all of them because they're kind of long, because adult writers are very
verbose.
And so we have here Jhumpa Lahiri, author of Interpreter of Maladies, my favorite. She said, I think writer's block is a natural part of the creative process for almost all writers. There are times when one is bursting with ideas and inspiration and all the necessary components are in place. But there are other times when one or more of these elements is missing and writing is more difficult as a result. So Jhumpa Lahiri is team writer's block is real. Then you have Toni Morrison.
Queen,
R.I.P.
Everything.
Who said, I disavow the term. There are times when you don't know what you're doing or where you don't have access to the language or the event. So if you're sensitive, you can't do it. And then she talks about how she wrote, before she wrote Beloved, she thought about it for 3 years before even writing.
Those answers are so different.
They're so far apart.
So far apart.
And then you have someone like Carmen Maria Machado, who said, I believe so strongly that writers need to read and that reading is the way you prevent writer's block or get over writer's block. So she's team writer's block is real, but there's an actual cure.
Right, the medicine. So she has like a prescription for the block.
Yes. And then you have Pat Ruffus, author of The Wind book.
The Name and the Wind. A.K.A. 5,000 pages.
5,000 pages of fantasy. He's very cool.
Yeah.
There's something he said. There's, for example, who's heard of writer's block? I really don't think it exists. Actually,
no, sorry.
I'm going to take that back. It does exist. We'll state it flatly. Sometimes writing is super hard, just like any other job. Or if it's not your job, sometimes it's hard to do a thing, even if it is your hobby. But no plumber ever gets to call into work and they're like, Jake, I have plumber's block. What would your boss say? I have teacher's block. I have accounting block. They would say, you're fired. You have problems and you are fired. Get your ass in there and plumb some stuff, Jerry.
So he's like, writing is not a hobby. Writing is a job. It's a job that you do, whether you want to do it or not.
Yes. Huh. I have a couple more. Judy Blume.
Queen.
Judy Blume, author of Blubber, which I read in Spanish.
Yes. And Forever.
Yes.
And Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And just Dear God, It's Me, Margaret,
yeah.
The greatest book.
Are you there? Yeah.
Yeah.
She said, I don't believe in writer's block.
What? Judy? What?
My favorite authors really are not trying to prove my point.
I
don't believe in writer's block. For me, there is no such thing. Don't even say writer's block, quoth Judy Blume.
Excuse me, Queen Judy.
So we'll start there. I also want to throw in Brendan Reichs, our bud, Brendan Reichs,
yes.
Who said, it doesn't exist. writing garbage is better than writing nothing. Write something even if it's garbage.
That was a great Brendan Reich's impression. I don't know if he'll love that, but I think it's great.
We love you, Brendan.
This is a lot to talk about.
This is a lot to process. Okay, because so what do you believe?
I believe that writer's block is another form of fatigue, I guess. Because I don't want to sit here and say that I don't get tired, that I don't wake up and not want to write. Every day, some days I wake up and I'm like, yes, all the factors are in place. I've slept well. My body's feeling good. I know what I'm going to eat for the day. I have the whole day with no interruptions. And it's like sort of the perfect weather for writing. And there are other days that I wake up and I'm like, shoot, I hate this. And I don't have any gas in my tank.
Yeah.
But I still have to do it. And so I don't know.
You can't plumb away. You can't be a plumber.
Right. I don't want to be a plumber. But I understand what Patrick Rothfuss was saying, where you've got to go to work. When I was a teacher and a librarian, I had to show up, even if I didn't want to, even if I was tired.
I
had to go to work.
I think that Patrick Rothfuss's theory is closer to what I believe, where I'm just like, well, writer's block isn't real, but actually it kind of is. So it's a contradiction, because we, as creators and as creatives, we have the luxury of being like, well, I can't create today. But someone with another kind of job, like my mother, who, you know, her job is more physical and she works as a manager in a stockroom for a big company, like she doesn't get the option to be like, I can't do my work today because I have this kind of fatigue. Which is not to say that we don't suffer for our art or for our creative needs. But it is different. And I think it's the two kinds of brains looking at writing. It's like the more logistical brain, mm-hmm. who's like, I'm a writer, I need to write.
Right.
And then
Because
it's my job. And then there's a creative one which says, I can't force this because it's art. So right. It is the two, our two selves, the business self and the artistic self, which are fighting with each other.
And it's weird because this is why I feel like there are so many answers to this question and why we get it so many times is, you know, what do you do to get over writer's block? And I don't know if I like, maybe I just don't like the term writer's block.
Maybe
it's the wrong word.
I think because I feel like we're all describing the same thing, the inability to put words on the page. And there was another tweet that by an author whom I will not name, who said that writer's block doesn't exist, but excuses exist one of the excuses is not being a real writer.
Oh, I feel attacked. I feel very attacked by this.
Yeah.
Because just because I don't want to write on Monday doesn't negate or not make me a writer.
Right. And just because I don't want to write or can't write for 3 months or even a year. I had writer's block for a year when I was 18.
Oh, you were a spring chicken back in the good old days.
Back in the day before I had wrinkles around my eyes.
You were full of sunshine in your soul. Yeah. And you had writer's block. And you couldn't write for a year. I had trouble writing. I had two surgeries in 2017. And I could not write for a month and a half after I had my surgeries. Because one, my body was in chaos and healing. Mm-hmm. And so I just felt terrible every day. And I was on a pain management regimen, so the medication they were giving me made me really foggy, and I couldn't think through sentences and think through plot and characters, so I couldn't write. So according to that writer's definition, if I don't write for a month and a half, that makes me not a writer. It's an excuse.
Right. It makes you lazier. It makes you this. And I think that
it's the wrong way to think about this.
It's very toxic. And I wonder if there are better ways of talking about writer's block where we don't have to have a single answer for it, you know, because we're all coming to this career from different experiences.
I wish that we changed it and made it, what do I do when I get stuck?
Yeah.
Versus, I have this thing called writer's block. I have this thing, this amorphous, weird thing that's complicated.
Yeah.
No, what happens when I get stuck and I don't want to open my manuscript, or when I want to burn it and I hate it and I don't want to be a writer anymore? Someone give me the prescription to deal with that.
Yeah.
Who's got the answers for that?
Not I. Said the chicken.
Oh, I hate it. I love it. No, but it's true. What happens when sort of those doubt monsters come in and they keep me from writing?
Do you think that when we give the name to writer's block, that we turn them into physical manifestations of our own insecurities and fears? Because, like, okay, let's think about some of the reasons why we can have writer's block. You had a medical reason.
Yes.
And some people live with mental health reasons, mm-hmm. where they, because of their brain chemistry, they cannot write.
Or write every day.
Every day. And then there is a socioeconomic reason where maybe you are fucking broke and right. you can't think. There was a period of time where, like, I couldn't think of writing because all I could think about was when I was going to pay my bills.
That's right. I didn't have the luxury in my, like, to think about story when mm-hmm. I have three jobs.
Right.
I had to think about when am I going to eat? When am I going to sleep so that I can get up, rinse and repeat
yeah.
and make money to be able to stay alive.
And then when you're a professional writer and your first book or your second book or your third book has come out and you're getting those bad reviews. And our last episode, if you were listening in, we talked about the one-star review. And there's an added layer when you're a person of color and you get a review that sort of doesn't take into account what you're trying to do because the reviewer is a person who matters. The reviewer doesn't share a background and doesn't understand the story.
That's
huge. So because it didn't work for them, it doesn't work overall.
Right. And that's huge. And those reviews can really haunt you and really sort of stick with you. And a wonderful YA, an adult author, Kacen Callender, did a fabulous thread where they talked about how some of these Goodreads reviews, especially when they're about marginalized books that feature marginalized content or content about marginalized groups, how those one-star reviews can have a racist and bigoted tone to them. And I experienced this when I first published Tiny Pretty Things. One of the first Amazon reviews that we got the day after the book came out was said that, and I saved it and I printed it out, and I'm going to frame it. It said that Sona Cherrapatra, my writing partner, and I were racists. And we were racist because Tiny Pretty Things is like Pretty Little Liars, but set in a ballet boarding school where three kids are willing to do whatever it takes to be the best. It follows a Korean-American girl, a black girl, and a white girl. And it was interesting. The review said that we were racist because the white girl was mean. And I was like, oh, is this reverse racism? Like, what is this actually about? But it was one star. Thankfully, everyone in the Amazon comments took this reviewer to task, but it really bothered me for a long time, and it sort of rattled me when I was concepting other stories about, okay, so when I write my privileged white girl characters that I grew up with in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., I'm literally writing what I know.
Is that hashtag own voices.
Hashtag own voices, living under white supremacist structures and being the fly in the milk in high school.
That was a lot.
That was a lot. I was like, okay, so can I not talk about and show how white folks may terrorize marginalized characters in my work? Because those are microaggressions, right, and that's telling the truth.
And I think that people just, in that case, a white person doesn't want to see themselves as the villain.
Right.
Because they want to see, especially like liberal white people want to see themselves as allies and saviors, and there are people who are great, but at the same time, it's like you have to accept that this is a reality.
Right.
Like there are bad guys and villains and in characters
from all colors, all kinds. Backgrounds.
So for me, that one star review is a huge part of being a working writer. But these are kinds of reviews for marginalized people that are impossible to ignore because they are not talking about our writing. They are talking about us.
Right. And our characters who represent our communities, who represent our family, mm-hmm. represent everything that we come from. And so when someone gives you this review that is full of sort of dog whistles and bigotry, where they're like, I don't like this book one star. And it's like, you one starred it because you don't like my group of people and you don't like what I'm writing about. And right. that, and it can be veiled, or you don't understand.
I also challenge readers to look at the way that they write, their reviews, and they say, for instance, I hate love triangles. I'm so sick of them. But Cassandra Clare did them. Sarah J. Maas did them. Leigh Bardugo did them. And so you have these books and you're tired of them, but when you read them by you or by me or by any other person of color, you'll say, that's the moment that you choose to be tired of love triangles.
Oh, we're over it. It's funny.
Or if it's like two queer characters, right? So think, if you're a reader listening to this podcast, I would challenge you to think about the way that you look at books at that moment in time.
Right. And it's interesting, when The Bells first came out, I got a lot of sort of backlash about, we're done with the girl in the dress kind of thing, and we're done with this royalty sort of court intrigue type of book. And I was like, really? We're done? But
they were just waiting for you to come out.
Right. But I'm like, but there are no black girls in these settings, but yet we're done.
There's one. But, I'm just kidding.
Right. How dare you? You're a monster. Like, how dare you say that we're done now? That's mm-hmm. It's so unfair. And so that's the kind of stuff that really does affect me at this point in our career. And it's good that what I love is that we're talking about, you know, we've got several books out. And this is sort of, how do we wrestle these monsters that keep showing up on the road with us? I thought that it would get easier. I honestly thought book one, book two, book three, book four, that this would become a well-oiled machine, that we would be able to just keep doing this.
Yeah.
And without these kinds of things showing up along the way. But I'm finding that every single book, I'm back to the beginning. I'm dealing with writer's block. I'm dealing with how sort of the way that I'm reviewed affects the way that I approach my work. Because again, we're tagged a lot on Instagram mm-hmm. and on Twitter with one-star reviews consistently and constantly.
Or like, I don't like the way you did this. Well, great, person.
Thanks for tagging
me. I can't change it. Right. It's done. I'm not writing fan fiction individually for you.
Right.
Chuck Wendig, I think, called it like being a personal pen monkey.
Right.
Where you're writing for a specific person, but at the same time, like, no, I'm not writing. If you get something out of my book, that's wonderful, but I'm writing for a lot of people, namely myself.
Right. And yourself.
As a teenager,
and making mm-hmm. sure that you can write the books that your teen self wanted to see. And sometimes that means that some people won't see themselves.
Yeah, so I'm grateful for Kaysen for bringing that up. Kaysen's book, Queen of the Conquered, comes out next year.
No.
This year.
It's coming out soon, in a couple of weeks, which is super, super exciting.
Yes, it is.
So yes, excited it is. For it. All of Kaysen's work is brilliant.
November 12th, Queen of the Conquered. Let's move on to we still don't have an answer, Danielle. Does it exist?
This podcast is full of answers and non-answers. Things we know and things we don't know, but stuff we want to talk about as working writers, sort of stuck in these trenches, stuck with this mess,
stuck in this dark alley,
right,
full of garbage.
Garbage and trash, basura.
And our writer's block monsters that we have created. So yes. We've created these monsters, one-star reviews, bad trade reviews, the mental health monster. I feel like for two whole years, between 2017 and even till now, I was super depressed. And I didn't know how to handle it, because depression is not something that you talk about. I don't like talking about it. It's not part of my cultural background, and I know how toxic that is. And I do think that people should have more open conversations about it. But I don't feel comfortable going online and being like, hey, let me talk about my depression.
Right. Like you're having low spoons today. Like you're struggling to do all of the things you need to do.
Which is not to say other people can't go online and do that, you know.
It's just cultural.
It's just me.
Right.
And I think the way that I dug myself out of it was by – I actually don't know.
Blame it on your friends.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, yeah. I think that going to events, going to see my friends, leaving the house, going for walks, trips, I feel like I try to ask myself what I wanted. What do I want and why? Why do I feel this way? Because for me, it's not a chemical imbalance. Some people can't help it. It's a chemical imbalance. For me, it was just a station in my life. And I think that I think about my friend groups and my mom and my grandmother and my family and sort of like not having the luxury to be able to stop my work for a long period of time. But I also realized that I am not easy on myself, and that is really toxic.
And it's super hard, and it's about building other people in your life that can make you go easier. I think the best thing for me was when we got this office together, Deadline City, because being at home alone in what I call my deadline cave, my pain cave, where I just feel like my muscles are falling apart, I'm dying, everything is wrong, my house is a mess, there are papers everywhere. Having to take a shower, put on a bra, get out of the house, get caffeinated, and get to a place where other people were waiting on me was the best thing for any sort of block that I was having. Because I knew that I would come in and I would have my two friends, Mark Ashiro and Zoraida Cordova, like, bitch, where you at? Like, what's going on?
Where are you? Get here. We have to work.
And there's something about a synergy and an energy that you can create in a shared space. I know writing is a solitary profession.
It's absolutely solitary. And I think that our setup is not a typical one. You know, we live in New York, so we can meet up, like, and be here and have this office space. I think that as I get older, I realize that my connections to people are the things that keep me going.
Yes. Having someone waiting on me.
Yeah.
And having someone sit with you. Sometimes you just need somebody to sit with you and work alongside you. I wouldn't have gotten many of my books done this year. I've written 4 books. Without you sitting right behind me and us up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and being like, okay, I got a buddy in this.
Yeah, and scaring you with my puffer pig.
That puffer pig, if you have not seen on Instagram, his name is Chanchito, and he makes a terrible sound that's terrifying. He's going to die soon.
No, he's not. Leave him alone. Chanchito is a puffer pig from Star Wars Land from Galaxy's Edge that I bought. Hold, please.
And Did you hear that? That's an awful sound.
And he makes that noise. Ah!
I hate him.
He's adorable. Leave him alone. But yeah, I think that obviously if you have depression, you have to go to a professional and get medicine and realize and that there is a community out there for you and that you're not alone in these feelings. My journey is my own, and I realize how much it is entrenched in the toxicity of growing up Latinx. But I have worked myself out of it and figured out what works for me specifically. When I have writer's block, for a long period of time, I didn't believe that writer's block was a real thing.
Right.
Because I wanted to call it something else.
Right. And it's controversial. As you saw, authors have so many different answers and opinions.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, we're calling a rose by any other name.
I hate it.
It's still writer's block.
Oh my God, I knew you were going to say that. I hate it. I hate it so much. Oh, ugh.
Oh, God. You love it. But, so, I mean, we're saying the different things to describe the same feeling. The inability to write. Okay? So.
Fine.
We've described some of the ways that you and I get out of it. I also keep a journal. I don't always write in this journal, but I carry it around with me like an albatross. I have recently...
Albatross of feelings.
Yes. I've recently switched over to a planner. I have the Moleskine planner that has... it's weekly. So when I write my schedule. For me, it helps me to have a set schedule. And I have realized that I put so much pressure in getting words down for a day that I go into a tailspin and I don't actually write.
Oh, so when you do your a daily word goal?
Not always a tailspin? No, the tailspin is if I don't start by 10 o'clock in the morning, I won't get any work done.
Why? What?
Because I psych myself out.
Oh, my God.
It's just my brain. It's just like, oh, if I don't do this, it's just I can't work for the rest of the day, and then I'll do something else.
Sometimes I don't get started until like 3 or 4.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Overwhelmed. But now when I divide, give myself a schedule that I allow myself to fail. That's the thing that has changed. Allowing myself to fail and to have a zero word count has helped a lot. I did a long distance hike in, was it this year? Yes.
Yes, you were in Scotland. I was there. You left me.
So I went.
How did you not remember this? How did you block this out?
I didn't block it out. I just have really bad memory. So I'm like, was it this year or last year?
You split your pants. You're out from the. You also love the drag. Also, your tent broke. You stepped in all this mud. You were on this bus. It's been it was an adventure.
Thank you for reminding me of my
the trauma. Of the trauma. So
I feel like long distance hiking is very similar to writing in many different ways. You can be over prepared or not prepared enough. Mm. You can pants or plot. And by, you know, you either set out and walk as many miles as you need to for that day, or you're like, I have to walk 11 miles to make my goal. Or if you're hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, like some people, like Cheryl Strayed, you'll hike 30 miles in a day.
Oh, gosh.
So you're saying, shit on your bag.
Oh, my God. So you're saying that you, for writer's block for you, you treat it like a hike. And for writing in general, when you make your plan to make sure that you aren't blocked, you treat it like a hike.
I treat it like a hike. So I planned very detailed for my hike. The only thing I didn't plan correctly was
the wind,
the elevation gain for mountains.
Mountains are a thing. They're this pesky little thing.
Yeah, that you have to climb over.
Right.
And not fall face down in 32 mile per hour winds.
And split your pants.
Shut up.
So you approach it like hiking. Okay.
So. Yeah. And so I was super prepared, but after a couple of days of not meeting my mileage goal, so instead of hiking 15 miles, I would end up hiking 10 miles. Instead of beating myself up over it, I allowed myself to enjoy the mileage that I was making, even if it was 1 mile.
Which is huge, because if you didn't, you could get yourself into a tailspin and then
you can injure your muscle. I could, right. I injured my, like the first time I did a long distance hike, I injured my toe. I stubbed my toe and my nail turned black.
I remember that. Gross! I remember
blood
that.
Blood clot in my toe.
And you fucking almost Vermont. Got, that's you why they call. Got taken by a cult. I remember all these things.
I did almost get taken by a cult. Google the Yellow Deli cult, people.
Wait for the memoir.
It's a wild.
Wild. I love it. that's interesting. You think of it like a hike, and I think of writing like a marathon. And so it has some of the similar things.
So you're just doing what I do, but you're running.
Right, but I'm running. But also, when you run, or at least when I run, I vomit a lot. So,
do you vomit while you're writing?
No, but my version of vomiting while I'm writing is sort of the painful parts where I might have to stay up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because I'm in a groove, or I've got to get past this plot point. Or it just feels really painful sometimes to be writing. I think that when you tell true stories and when you really try to build worlds that have something to say, it can be a painful process. And I've always found running, I ran track in high school, to be excruciating. There was a payoff at the end. It was great to finish the race and to also have those endorphins, but that route along the way was full of pain. And I feel like for me, writing is a muscle. And I know when we say, oh, you're blocked, what are you doing? I just think it's time to rest a particular part of the muscle. Maybe I need time away from my computer.
Yeah.
So therefore, I handwrite. I handwrite most of my work. Or maybe I just need to watch stories and really remember, oh, this is how you can tell a love story with banter. This is a different way to tell a love story, and like really fill up my well when it gets depleted. And I think that there are so many different kinds of ways to rest the muscle and keep the muscle strong.
Yeah.
And I think when people ask me, what do I do about writer's block? I always say, it's not that I don't believe in it. I believe that we can also be tired and our creative muscle is fatigued.
I think you have to step back and figure out why, what is causing this? What is the root of this impasse, right? Did you overextend yourself? Did you stub your toe like I did?
For me, a lot of it is that my schedule is nuts. So it's me moving around too much, literally my physical body having to travel.
And then deciding to start a podcast because you don't have enough time to to do.
I mean, these are things. These are things that I do. And I think it's because I'm a Gemini. I really, really love doing all of the things.
Yeah.
But I think that something that I've figured out, my best writing days are when I've been home for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to sleep in my own bed. I've been able to cook my own food. And then I can get into my rhythm.
Right.
When my body is moving a lot around, I can't find my perfect writing groove.
What do you do when you feel like, well, I'm well rested and I've relaxed my muscle and I have done everything you're supposed to do and you still can't write?
That's never happened to me.
Okay.
Because I know my rhythm so well now.
And you know yourself.
I know myself that once those sort of, there's never a perfect writing day, but if I get close, I'm going to write. And now I really just don't have a choice. So I have to push the muscle. What I do need to really work on is making sure that I have time in between projects to rest that muscle, to refill the well, which is another metaphor I think that is circling around writer's block, is that I think we all have a creative well and we fill it up with all kinds of things. What we see every day when we're going around, the things that we watch on TV, the books that we're reading, our family members, things people say to us. And when you don't have time to fill that well, you have nothing to pull from for your work.
Right.
And that's when I feel like my words get real stale. I'm like, oh, because I haven't been reading.
Yeah.
I haven't been watching. I haven't been eavesdropping on conversations. I haven't gone to a restaurant. I go to restaurants all the time.
Bitch, I'm always eavesdropping.
Right. And I eat alone, but instead of playing on my phone, why not look around and watch body language and see how people are communicating?
There was something that a little while ago, I took a Twitter break. It wasn't very long. I think it was about a week. And I felt super re-energized. And I think that there are some ways to protect yourself, your own personal space. And I do think that Twitter contributes to bad mental health because it is a barrage of information and a stream of a mix of good things and bad things and an extreme of terrible things, and then dog pictures and cats.
Right. You basically know? So, MG Anderson's feed.
Yes.
I remember that. Yes.
That book, Feed. I love that book.
So good.
And so I think like learning the most you can about your writer self and how that integrates with your personal self and your work self if you are a person who has another job on top of being a writer. I think like once you figure those people out, it will become easier.
How many books did it take you to figure out your rhythm as a writer? I mean, this is a podcast for, I mean, beginning writers, but really about sort of talking about those people who are in the career trenches of this writing thing.
Yeah.
How long did it take you? How many books until you figured out, like, this is my writer self. This is what I need to not get blocked. This is what I need for my well.
I think it was all 7 years. I think that the beginning of this year was, well, remember, I worked 10 years at night. Like, nights, I worked at a bar and a nightclub. And I had the schedule where I went to work at 7 p.m. I got out of work at 4 a.m. I went to the gym because that was just the mentality that I had. Went to the gym at 4 in the morning. Went home to sleep. Woke up at 2 p.m., wrote, and then repeated that. Wow. 6 days a week.
Wow.
And there was a period of time where there were 2 years where I also went to school and did that as well and tried to write a book.
It can be done.
Yeah, I can't duplicate that kind of output anymore.
Right.
That's something my 20-year-old self could do, my 19-year-old self could do, but not the old bitch that I am now.
Not the old bitch in the 30s. Shit breaks down.
Yeah, it does. And then, so I've always had different situations when it comes. I've never written a book with the same situations because that's there's no stressful. Control, right? There's no control. It's like an experiment. You have your controlled experiment and then the other experiment.
Right, the variable.
The variable.
But I'm a person who likes comfort, mm-hmm. and I'm a creature of comfort, and I wish and I hope at some point that each book will have a definite shape and rhythm in its creation, mm-hmm. to where I settle in that this is my process. I had to own this year that I do better and write better chapters if I handwrite them first and then type them in and do my editing as I'm typing in the words.
I used to do that, but I don't have time.
I don't have time either, but I realize that there are some chapters that I just cannot write unless I handwrite them. Mm-hmm. I'm completely blocked from the computer. And I just had to say, Danielle, this is your process. You like to print things, you like to handwrite, and I was fighting it. I was fighting it for a long time, trying to think, I should just type everything, And I realized, no, after a couple of books, it's been a couple of books where I'm like, my best scenes are the ones that I handwrite. Yeah. I handwrite every first chapter, every ending chapter, every climax or really big conflict scene. I have to be able to slow down and also not be distracted by my computer. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. I'm like, ooh. Here's Twitter. here's shopping. Ooh, email.
There were a couple of times where I did, like, I binge wrote, where I would write nothing for a month, and then in one day, I wrote 24,000 words.
I would do that in a weekend.
Yeah.
But it breaks me. So absolutely. What I figured out was if I, on deadline, not managing my project well, I would come to these points of crisis where I had to write 25,000 words in 2 days.
Yeah.
And I'd do it, but then I wouldn't be able to write for a week. I would literally, my brain would be jello.
I burned out in 2016.
Remember when you wrote that book with me, you, and Victoria Schwab in Amsterdam?
Yes.
Yeah, it was like, what, 2 weeks?
It was
a week?
I finished it in a week, yeah. Yeah. I started it in America.
Right, before we got
and to finished Amsterdam. It in Amsterdam.
Right.
But I did write like 25K, almost 30K in that week.
In a week.
Maybe more.
I think you wrote like 40 because you had to do some editing and going back and adding more.
Yeah, things. I did 40,000 words in that 1 week. That were we there a week or?
We were there more than a week.
Yeah, I wrote it that period of time. That was interesting because I didn't work on my computer. I worked on my keyboard and my iPad.
Don't you think that that's another way to combat writer's block is to change the type of instrument?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You change your instrument. I think that one of the recurring things that I see as answers is people shake themselves out. And I think you have to shake yourself out of whatever pattern you're in. And maybe that will help as well.
And I think it's interesting when you're using your keyboard. I use my keyboard too. The tactileness of hearing the clicking, mm-hmm. that sort of typewriter sound, the rhythm of that really got me into a zone. And so I was able, when I use that keyboard, I'm able to do more typing than just my computer, which I think is interesting. But that would be that's a huge tip for me when I really need to shake up my story or to get unstuck.
Right.
Change the medium. Handwrite or use that keyboard. Do the iPad. Change it up.
Yeah. For a while, I used an Alpha Smart. and which is only like $25, $30. They don't make them anymore. It's a word processor, and it has a little tiny like 1-inch by 3-inch screen where you can't even scroll up. And you write, and I wrote a lot of books using that word processor. And then I later got the free write, which is the $400 version. And I don't use it as much, even though it's more expensive. And I think that the reason I don't use it as much is because the company is also a little weird.
A little weird. I have one too, and mine's hung. I have to get it fixed. Oh. Gosh, it's like stuck.
Yeah. They got a little testy when another author and I complained about their screensaver doesn't have any women on it.
Oh, it definitely does not.
There's one who's supposed to be Agatha Christie, and I thought it was Sherlock Holmes, and I was like, wait, Sherlock Holmes isn't a writer.
Oh my God, it's a writer.
I love it. And they were like, well, there's Agatha Christie. So whatever. So like that's kind of put me off of the company in general. But it's still a good piece of equipment. And yes. I do use it to write. And I've used it to write a lot of thousands and thousands of words. And not being able to see a screen and putting my phone away. I really think that there is something to say about unplugging and returning to just your creative self and your own personal bubble.
I think so. And shutting off the noise.
Yeah. Right?
But it's so hard to do, but I think it's essential when we do feel blocked and when we want to use the creative muscle and the muscle feels like it's not giving us anything.
Yeah.
Unplugging is a way to do that.
Because, I mean, sometimes you can have reader's block and you haven't found a book that really pulls you in. And maybe it's not the book. Maybe it's just you.
Right. Sometimes I'm in a bad mood and I can't read certain absolutely. Books or watch certain shows.
So what I do is I go back to a book that I know I love.
Right.
And I reread. Like right now I'm rereading the Percy Jackson books, which I read
I'm rereading
for the
first, Harry Potter.
I read Percy Jackson for the first time in 2013.
They're still wonderful.
And they still, like, you know, they're still great. And it just you have to find something that gives you joy. And I think that when you're on the deadline bus and when you're struggling and when you're depressed and when you're having whatever issues in your life, it's impossible to find joy.
Right. And when you are several books in
and you feel helpless.
And you feel helpless, like, why isn't this getting any better? Why isn't it easier?
Why isn't my publisher doing this for me? Why is this person getting more than me? Why, right. You know.
All the noise comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's about finding the thing that you love.
Yeah.
And going back to that and being like, oh, this is why it is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And those reminders are huge. And I find that if I am blocked, sometimes it's low morale.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, I hate it. I don't want to be a writer anymore. I mean, I tell you that monthly. I'm like, I'm over this. We're done.
I quit. Pack it up. I only have one book left.
Look, I don't have that many books left in me. I feel that way. And then I'm like, ooh, another idea. But whatever. It's the painful process. It's the giving the pound of flesh. I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm tired and I want my process to even out. But I realize that I'm always going to get blocked. I'm always going to have fatigue. This is part of
your literary constipation.
I hate it. And I hate you. I hate that. I hate it. But it is a part of every one of my books. I fall apart at a certain part of my book.
Yeah.
And when we talk about NaNoWriMo, I'm going to need some tips on like,
oh,
what
absolutely.
Do I do not
I am
to fall
ready
apart.
For NaNoWriMo. That's going to be one of our upcoming episodes. I've realized that I hit a wall. And then I have to backtrack. My character is doing something that isn't natural. My character is doing something that, like, I'm forcing them. I'm forcing the action. And sometimes I literally set something on fire in the page.
Oh, and it's funny because I've seen her get to this place and she'll take out all her witchy paperwork and she'll, like, start sketching out she'll redo her hero's journey and, like, put everything out. And I see her with all these papers and, like, all these things. And I'm like, oh, she's mad. Her character's not doing what she wants it
to
do.
Yeah, I re-outline.
She'll re-outline.
I go back and I see where I went wrong.
She'll get her chart paper out and gets tactile.
While I was on my hike, I hit a really big wall. I didn't realize that in Scotland, if you see a fence, you're allowed to jump over it. But me, being American, I'm like, oh, there's a fence here. I can't go through. Turn around, get lost for an hour in the fucking moors with, like, 32-mile-per-hour winds.
Split your pants.
Yes,
put your foot in a bog.
That happened later. So I just had to keep going. And then when I couldn't keep going and I got lost, I backtracked. I rerouted. I decided to do something that I thought I couldn't do, which is jump over this fucking fence and then go into this field of sheep. And
snuggle with the sheep.
They smell terrible, don't you?
They're also mean.
And then I kept going, and then I finally got to my campground. But I also got to my campground after taking a shortcut, which I should not have taken, which is walking across a beach. And so me and my 32-pound backpack were sinking into the surf.
You could have died. You could have gone into this sinkhole and been in Hades.
In the ocean. That doesn't make sense.
I don't know. Somewhere in the underworld. Somewhere.
But you see what I mean? Like, I went back. I retraced. I rerouted my map.
And compass.
Then, yes. And then I got back on track. And that really helped me.
And that's totally what you do. I see you do that all the time. And I've stolen this method.
So it's an answer, but it's not a complete, it's not going to be the answer for everybody.
Right.
I hope that there's something that you found in this discussion. If you have your own writer's block tips, or you completely disagree with us, you know, let us know.
Leave them in the comments. We'd love to know your tips for writer's block, or if you believe that it's even a thing. I believe it's a thing.
A just rose like I, by any other name.
Oh, not again. I was going to say that just like I believe in aliens and extraterrestrial life, I believe in writer's block. Thanks so much for joining us today in
Deadline City. Deadline City. And good night.